Chapter 4, A Bridge of Whale Ships. Although the popular image of the typical Yankee whaleman is that of an Anglo-American, this is far from the reality. Following the sweep of the trade winds, a veritable bridge of whale ships spanned from New Bedford to the Azores and Cabo Verde. These voyages visited so frequently that Portuguese-speaking whalemen became integrated into Yankee whaling, and by the mid-19th century made up more than half of the labor pool. Whaling crews were more likely than not to heavily incorporate Native American, African American, and foreign labor. In fact, it was a meritocracy of sorts, as only the most skilled rose through the ranks regardless of race or color. As these voyages began visiting lands as far-flung as Japan, New Zealand, and the islands of Oceania, the diversity of crews increased even further. The ship Minerva, during her 1856 to 1860 voyage out of New Bedford, for example, listed 33 foremast hands, 7 Cabo Verdeans, 2 Azoreans, 3 Chamorros from Guam, 3 East Indians, 2 Malays, 1 Bengali, 13 Hawaiians, 1 Tahitian, and 1 Little Jack from Wellington Island. New Bedford has always been a welcoming destination for immigrants and is a city shaped today by the rich diversity of its residents. New arrivals live alongside descendants of Wampanoag Indians and the many ethnic groups that have made and changed New Bedford for over 300 years, as described in Moby Dick by Herman Melville. In thoroughfares nigh the docks, any considerable seaport will frequently offer to view the queerest-looking nondescripts from foreign parts, but New Bedford beats all Water Street and Wapping. In these last-mentioned haunts, you see only sailors. In New Bedford, actual cannibals stand chatting at street corners, savages outright, many of whom yet carry on their bones unholy flesh. It makes a stranger stare. But beside the Fijians, Tongo Tabors, Aramangoans, Panangians, and Brigians, and beside the wild specimens of the whaling craft, which unheeded reel about the streets, you will see other sights still more curious, certainly more comical. There weekly arrive in this town scores of green Vermonters and New Hampshire men, all athirst for gain and glory in the fishery. They are mostly young, of stalwart frames, fellows who have fell forest and now seek to drop the axe and snatch the whale lance. As the whaling industry grew, the need for crewmen influenced New Bedford's ethnic character. In the 18th and early 19th century, crews were drawn from men of African, British, or Native American ancestry who had settled in and around the city. As a potato famine ravaged Ireland in the mid-19th century, many residents fled and established a large New Bedford Irish community. Around 1850, an increasing number of whalemen from the Azorean and Cabo Verdean Islands, governed by Portugal, joined the crews of New Bedford vessels and began to make their homes in the city. Portuguese-speaking immigrants were not all treated equally when they arrived in the U.S. Consider when Cabo Verdean and Azorean whalers and their families who followed them came ashore. The welcome these two groups received might have been quite different. These inequalities persisted for over two centuries. Through the course of the late 19th and 20th centuries, how these populations self-identified has mirrored the post-Civil War struggle for civil rights. For example, a Cabo Verdean immigrant could have 3 separate nationalities over the course of a life, first as a Portuguese citizen from Cabo Verde, next as a naturalized U.S. citizen, and lastly as a Cabo Verdean citizen after 1975. Overlay the civil rights struggle in the U.S., and you could begin to appreciate the complexities involved in self-identity and perception. In the 19th century, the majority of Lusophone immigrants were white and Catholic. These racial and religious identities shaped how Azorean and Cabo Verdean immigrants were treated by American society, tied to its Protestant self-perception. Many Cabo Verdean mariners, identified as Portuguese on one side of the ocean, were viewed not by ethnicity, but rather by race after their arrival in the U.S. By contrast, the assimilation of Azorean mariners, who also retained a strong cultural connection with their ancestral homeland and Catholic faith, were far easier and less discriminatory. As the Quakers had challenged the religious structures of New Bedford in the 17th and 18th centuries, Azorean and Cabo Verdean Catholics would establish their own parishes in once strong Protestant enclaves in the 19th century, altering the New Bedford community. Throughout the 20th century, successive waves of chain migration led to the entire evolution of the current demographic structure of New Bedford. Like other American cities, New Bedford was transformed by 19th century industrialization, which brought an influx of immigrants who wanted jobs and relief from difficult conditions in their native lands. Although 14% of the city's population was foreign-born in 1865, the development of the textile industry swelled that number to 40.9% in 1900. After the turn of the 20th century, 70% of all Cabo Verdeans coming to the United States came through the Port of New Bedford, a Massachusetts version of Ellis Island. Portuguese from mainland Portugal and Madeira began arriving after 1870 to work in the mills. They joined earlier immigrants from the Azores and Cabo Verde Islands to make the Portuguese the largest cultural community in New Bedford today. French Canadians also came to work in the mills in the years after the end of the Civil War, 1865. For a time around 1900, they were the largest group of immigrants in New Bedford. In addition, immigrants from the world over have contributed to the rich tapestry of cultural life in New Bedford. Significant Dominican, Central American, Puerto Rican, South American, and Asian communities have also developed in recent years. Chapter 4, Profile of Azorean New Bedford. Between the 1820s and the mid-1900s, Azorean immigrants, largely because of the whaling industry, created strong communities in New Bedford, Fall River, and other nearby towns. The first Portuguese Catholic parish in the United States, St. John the Baptist, was established in New Bedford in 1871. The Portuguese became an integral part of the cultural, business, industrial, and social community of New Bedford. Today, the Portuguese community remains strong in the region, with about 60% of New Bedford's population claiming Portuguese descent. Antón L. Silva, who owned shares in many vessels and managed numerous whaling voyages, demonstrates the point. The bark Greyhound, of which he was part owner, was the unofficial school ship for Azorean officers. Azoreans, who later became captains, served at one time on board the Greyhound. Silva also owned property all over New Bedford, including a cigar manufacturing firm. He owned and managed packet ships, including the Veronica and the Moses B. Tower, employing other Azoreans and trading goods and traveling between New Bedford, the Azores, and Madeira while returning with passengers. Manuel Goulart, 1866 to 1946, was born on the island of Faial, Azores. When he was 9 years old, a visit to a photographer convinced him that the man worked magic. His curiosity fostered experiments with whatever materials were at hand. He built a laboratory, or darkroom, in the ground floor of the family home, and was joined by his younger brother Jose, 1870 to 1955. In 1889, Manuel sailed to New Bedford with the intention of learning photography and then returning to his homeland to practice the profession. After 2.5 years, he opened his own studio on South 6th Street in New Bedford. The brothers Goulart succeeded throughout their lives, capturing in pictures the beauty of their native land and developing the art of portrait photography. Their work is evidence of the use of art in a new way, particular to immigrant communities, as a means of keeping alive the spirit and image of the homeland. The museum's Adeline H. Perkins Rand Photography Archive holds the Goulart Studio images from his New Bedford photographic studio. Chapter 4, Profile of Amos Haskins. Captain Amos Haskins, 1816 to 1861, a Wampanoag Indian of the Gayhead tribe, is believed to be one of the few Native Americans to ever become a ship's master. He achieved the rank in 1851 at the age of 35, when he became master of the Mattapoisett bark, Massasoit. Born and raised in Rochester, Massachusetts, he was first found on the crew of a whaling vessel in April 1841 as a second mate on the brig Chase of Mattapoisett. Throughout the next decade, he shipped on numerous whaling voyages from Mattapoisett as a second or first mate, including the brig Anawan II, 1843-44, the brig Willis, 1847-48, the ship Cachalot, 1845-47, and the bark Elizabeth, 1849-50. On October 31, 1844, he married New Bedford-raised African-American domestic Elizabeth P. Farmer, age 21. Together, they would have 5 daughters, Margaret, Hannah, K, Caroline, Mary, and Elizabeth. Captain Haskins was in command of the bark Massasoit for two Atlantic voyages from the years 1851 to 1852. In 1857, at age 40, he shipped to the Mattapoisett bark Oscar, which took him out of the Atlantic for the first time. The four-year voyage went to the North Pacific. 2 years into the voyage, the New Bedford Standard erroneously reported that Haskins had drowned off San Francisco in 1859. A month later, they reported their mistake when Haskins returned home to his family. He shipped out once more on the brig March in 1860 and died at sea 1 year later. He is buried in a family plot in New Bedford's rural cemetery. Chapter 4. Profile of the Packet Trade, the Dominant Involvement of Entrepreneurial Packet Ship Captains and Owners in Cabo Verdean Immigration to the United States is both unprecedented and important. As whaling declined, Cabo Verdean mariners recognized opportunity. Entrepreneurs purchased and repurposed ocean-going vessels, often former whale ships, and developed a strong packet trade between the islands and New England. Regularly scheduled routes carried cargo and passengers, strengthening cultural bonds through the exchange of goods and the transportation of thousands of immigrants to New England. These packet ships returned to Cabo Verde laden with care packages from America. For many, the American experience began upon boarding a packet vessel such as the Coriolanus, Arcturus, Amos Peggs, Savoia, Bradford E. Jones, or Ernestina. Of all Cabo Verdean immigrants to the United States between 1800 and 1921, more than 70% arrived via the port of New Bedford. No other group with an African heritage was able to develop and control their means of transportation to this country during the 19th and early 20th centuries. The schooner Ernestina was the last sailing vessel to bring immigrants to the United States from Cabo Verde. This vessel served many purposes, since she was originally launched in 1894 as the F.E.M. Morrissey, under the command of Captain Clayton Morrissey. The F.E.M. Morrissey was retrofitted in New Bedford and renamed Ernestina after the daughter of Cabo Verdean Captain Enrique Mendez, and completed dozens of packet voyages between New England and Cabo Verde. In 1982, a combined Cabo Verdean and American crew sailed the Ernestina on her return voyage to New England. The schooner was gifted to the United States by the newly independent Republic of Cabo Verde, with the support of its first president, Aristides Pereira. She was 120 years old in 2014. The Ernestina, currently in the custody of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is the official vessel of Massachusetts and a National Historic Landmark, as designated by the U.S. Department of the Interior. Renamed the Ernestina Morrissey in 2014, and following an extensive restoration, she will be berthed within the New Bedford Whaling National Historical Park and once again sail the high seas.